Welcome to Counter Apologetics.
Welcome to Counter Apologetics. I'm your host, Emerson Green, and today we'll be discussing Darwinism and eugenics. Welcome to part two of our discussion on whether or not atheism is responsible for the atrocities of the 20th century. If you haven't heard last week's episode, I would go back and listen so we're all on the same page. This week, we're continuing our discussion into the territory of Darwinism, Nazi eugenics, and whether atheists are able to morally condemn the events of the 20th century. Apologists love to claim that Darwin was the basis for Nazi eugenics. They will also use this as an argument against evolution. Of course, as I mentioned at the outset of part one, naming negative consequences to believing something does not count against the truth value of that thing. That's just an argument from the consequences. Again, that seems obvious, but that often gets lost in these conversations. But what about the claim that the Holocaust was in fact the logical result of a belief in evolution? The principles of selective breeding, or the idea that you can selectively breed an organism to either enhance or diminish certain features, is not an idea that Darwin came up with. In fact, his ideas for evolution by natural selection were in large part inspired by the artificial selection or selective breeding that had already existed for a very long time. Eugenics, as we know it today, began in England. Darwin's cousin Francis Galton advocated for selective breeding of humans for better traits. He also coined the phrase nature versus nurture and was the originator of twin studies. At that time, eugenics simply meant to encourage people with desirable phenotypes like intelligence to have more offspring. Galton himself never made peace with negative eugenics or the sterilization of those deemed unfit. The United States, on the other hand, was willing to take that step. Eugenics went further and we began to forcibly sterilize people. We even had our very own eugenics record office. You may have heard the famous line from the Supreme Court Judge Oliver Wendell Holmes, quote, "Three generations of imbeciles are enough," end quote. That was in regards to the forcible sterilization of a woman who was deemed mentally unfit. In Germany, Hitler didn't just advocate that healthy couples procreate or forcible sterilization, but he actively exterminated people who the Nazi Party deemed genetically inferior. There was a push for racial purity, since Hitler believed that the country's problems were mainly due to the Jews and other groups he considered to be genetically inferior. So, there you have it, a straight line from Darwin to Hitler. Well, not quite. There are a few missing pieces to the puzzle that are critical. Anti-Semitism was central to the Nazi eugenics program, and more on that in a minute. And to re-clarify some of the commonly mentioned terms in this discussion, Darwinism and atheism are not the same thing, and Darwinism and social Darwinism are not the same thing. So what's the difference between Darwinism and social Darwinism? Darwinism is a scientific description of the world. Social Darwinism, on the other hand, is a political prescription for the world. One is a science and one is a social policy. Accepting evolution does not automatically lead one to social Darwinism. Secondly, social Darwinism needs to be informed by some other belief that you got somewhere else. Selective breeding is merely a tool. So how did the proponents of social Darwinism in Germany decide what should be bred out of the human race, and why did they decide that the Jews needed to be killed off and not some other group? They got their anti-Semitism from somewhere else, and don't forget that, because this is important, understanding Darwinism, the scientific description of the world, does not necessarily lead to the political prescription of social Darwinism. You can accept evolution while remaining completely hostile to social Darwinism.
Now, you are right when you say that aspects of what Hitler tried to do could be regarded as arising out of Darwinian natural selection. That's exactly why I said that I despise Darwinian natural selection as a motto for how we should live. I tried to say we should not live by Darwinian principles, but Darwinian principles explain how we got here and why we exist in the scientific sense.
Extreme anti-Semitism informed the Nazi policies that led to the Holocaust, and Hitler did not get his anti-Semitism from Darwin. He got it from neo-paganism and the long tradition of Christian hatred towards the Jews. Let me back that up. First, the Gospels blame the entire Jewish people for deicide, the murder of God. Quote, "His blood will be on us and our children," Matthew 27:25. According to the Gospels, the Jews kill Jesus. They're Christ killers and are portrayed as such in the New Testament. The Catholic Church didn't say until 1965 that the entire Jewish people collectively were not responsible for the murder of God. Historically, Christians have accused the Jews of blood libel, meaning that they were accused of kidnapping and murdering babies for their blood to be used in rituals. Christians also started the myth that Jews poison wells. Here's Jesus himself speaking to a group of Pharisees, who are Jews, in the book of John. Quote, "I know that you are descendants of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me, because my word finds no place in you. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, and has nothing to do with the truth, because there is no truth in him." John 8:37-39 and 44-47. Here's a quote from the founder of the Protestant movement, Martin Luther, from his book, which is actually titled On the Jews and Their Lies. Quote, "Set fire to their synagogues or schools. This is to be done in honor of our Lord and of Christendom, so that God might see that we are Christians. I advise their houses also be razed and destroyed. I advise the other prayer books and Talmudic writings in which such idolatry, lies, cursing, and blasphemy are taught to be taken from them. I advise that the rabbis be forbidden to teach on pain of loss of life and limb. I advise that safe conduct on the highways be abolished completely for the Jews." End quote. The Nazi Party displayed Martin Luther's book On the Jews and Their Lies during their rallies, and Luther was used frequently in Nazi propaganda. According to American historian Lucy Davidowitz, the line of anti-Semitic descent from Luther to Hitler is easy to draw. You'll find references to Martin Luther from Hitler and from other prominent Nazis. You won't find any references to Darwin from the Nuremberg trials. But extreme anti-Semitism isn't the only thing that Martin Luther and the Nazis had in common. They were also proponents of exterminating the mentally ill. He believed that mentally ill people did not have souls and were just empty vessels. He once met a child who was mentally handicapped and said that it would have been better to kill the child by drowning than allow it to continue to live. During the Nuremberg trials, as I mentioned, there was no reference to Darwin. There was, however, plenty of references to Martin Luther, as well as other Christian authors like the one who wrote Eugenics and Christianity, Questions of Sterilization, Northernization, Euthanasia, and Marriage. This book was an influence on Dr. Karl Brandt, who was Hitler's personal physician and the head of the euthanasia program. As you can probably guess, this book contains Christian justifications for things like sterilizing sick children at birth and killing mentally ill people. And he even cited Martin Luther's views that we mentioned earlier. I don't want there to be any confusion, so let me be perfectly clear. I'm not blaming Nazi eugenics on Christianity. I won't stoop to the same level that these Christian apologists sink to regularly. I'm only pointing out that this was not an atheistic regime, or even a regime that directly drew its inspiration from Darwin. It's much more complicated than that.
I'll just take the Führer. I think it's at the closing pages of chapter 2 that Adolf Hitler says that his work against the Jews is done on the direct instruction and inspiration of Almighty God. It's certainly a trope that's repeated throughout the book. And there was no reason for someone brought up in Catholic Austria, Bavaria, not to think that. Centuries of Christian instruction in the poisonous nature of the Jewish people, the verminous character of the Jewish people. An uncontroversial remark. The Vatican at that point was willing to ban books by Evelyn Waugh and Graham Greene. They were invited to ban Mein Kampf, did they? No, they didn't. What did it say on the belt buckle of every single member of the Nazi army? Gott mit uns. Do you want me to translate? It says God on our side, in German. I don't want to spoil a relatively friendly evening either. Don't you dare bring this up again.
Last week, we took a cursory glance at the most common names that get thrown around carelessly by apologists to understand a little bit about what they did and why. We talked about Mao, Pol Pot, and Stalin. I saved Hitler for this week since this episode is a lot more about eugenics. Hitler's policy was a blend of nationalism, militarism, economic protectionism, and racism. He called himself a national socialist, though he despised Marxism. He stated in Mein Kampf that the communist movement served Jewish interests and he fought against Jewish Bolshevism throughout his entire life. He claimed that the Jews were attempting to take over his country by diluting German and Aryan racial and cultural purity. He believed that if he could get rid of the Jews, Germany's post-war economic prospects would improve as the Jews were responsible for everything that was wrong in the country at the time. In addition to exterminating German Jews, he also killed homosexuals, gypsies, the disabled, and dissenters such as communists and social democrats, all to retain national, racial, and cultural purity. Again, I must have missed the part where atheism motivated his actions.
When did the Catholic Church excommunicate Hitler? Ben?
When he first began killing all of those innocent people in the name of atheism?
Sorry, the answer is never. After all, excommunication is only carried out for the very worst crimes, such as trying to have a woman ordained, or reporting a pedophile priest, or organizing an abortion for your 9-year-old daughter pregnant with twins due to having been raped by her stepfather.
Yeah, fair enough.
To return to the topic of Darwinism, something that bothers me is the implicit or explicit accusation that not just atheism, but the belief in evolution leads to genocide, wars, etc. Remember before Darwin when there was no such thing as war or genocide? I mean, this is just the standard, whatever I don't like is responsible for all the bad things. You might as well be one of those people who says 9/11 happened because of the gays or Hurricane Katrina happened because of abortion. Some apologists seem to think that racism is the natural result of Darwinism. For one, I'm pretty sure racism existed before 1859, but it's also wrong because Darwin and his entire family were abolitionists. Here's Darwin in The Voyage of the Beagle. Quote, "Those who look tenderly at the slave owner and with cold heart at the slave never seem to put themselves in the position of the latter. What a cheerless prospect with not even a hope of change. Picture to yourself the chance ever hanging over you, of your wife and little children, those objects which nature urges even the slave to call his own, being torn from you and sold like beasts to the first bidder. And these deeds are done by palliated men who profess to love their neighbors as themselves, who believe in God and pray that his will be done on earth. It makes one's blood boil, yet heart tremble to think that we Englishmen and our American descendants with their boastful cry of liberty have been and are so guilty." End quote. Of course, this is not to say that by today's standards, Darwin wasn't racist. He was a white aristocrat from the 19th century, and he said all kinds of things that would not be acceptable by today's standards. However, for his time period, he was extremely radical. To illustrate the silliness of the Christian arguments on these subjects, let's summarize their ideas in a syllogistic form. Credit to the Rationality Rules YouTube channel for writing this syllogism.
Premise 1. Atheism is the belief that organisms are the product of evolution by natural selection. Premise 2. The belief that organisms are the product of evolution by natural selection leads to social Darwinism. Conclusion. Because social Darwinism is immoral, atheism is therefore false.
So that first premise is false. Atheism is not Darwinism. Atheism is the belief that there are no gods, and Darwinism is a belief that living things are related and evolved through natural selection. You can believe one and not the other, or you can believe both. Secondly, Darwinism does not lead to social Darwinism. They are two different things, as I explained earlier, and you can accept evolution without becoming a social Darwinist. Thirdly, even if Darwinism inevitably led to social Darwinism, that would not count against the truth value of evolution by natural selection, and it would also not count against the truth value of atheism. No matter how many times this is dealt with, it just won't go away. Some apologists take a different route on the 20th century. Rather than blame the 20th century on the death of God, they may argue that atheists have no grounds to criticize the atrocities of the 20th century because they have no basis for objective morality. So, because you can't say Hitler was objectively morally wrong, you can't criticize him at all. First, there is no atheist position on morality. Atheism is not a thing. It doesn't entail any moral framework. You can be an atheist and hold any view on morality. You can be a moral realist, a moral nihilist, a deontologist, a consequentialist. You can take a blend of many different schools of thought, and so on. Atheism means nothing other than you don't believe in a god or gods. That being said, yes, atheists are allowed to morally condemn Hitler. It's also worth pointing out that apologists making this claim often present a false dichotomy. Either you believe in objective morality founded in Christian divine command theory, or you're a moral relativist. those are not the two options. Let me just give a 40,000-foot view of a few common views on morality among non-believers. This is intended to be a cursory look, so I apologize in advance if you feel like I don't do justice to your preferred moral philosophy. Some of the things I mention are not mutually exclusive ideas either, so keep that in mind as well. Many atheists, such as Sam Harris, do happen to believe in objective morality and attempt to justify it entirely within a naturalistic worldview. Condemning the Holocaust is no problem within this moral worldview. There are several different varieties of this naturalistic objective morality. They might go by the label moral realists or use the phrase irreducibly normative truths. Many other atheists do not believe in that sort of objective morality, but that doesn't mean that they're moral relativists. Maybe you're a utilitarian or a virtue ethicist, but the point is, once you apply an ethical framework, there are objectively correct and incorrect answers to moral questions. Given a certain set of values or a certain framework, there are better and worse ways to maximize or minimize the realization of your stated values. If you care about the suffering of conscious creatures, for instance, then there are objective ways you can make conscious creatures reliably suffer more or less. If you're a rule utilitarian, then there are better or worse rules you can impose to achieve whatever your goal is. They might think that the initial selection of this moral framework is objective, or they may not, but either way, these atheists can condemn genocide as well. Some atheists simply rely on their inner critic or their conscience, and I would like to reiterate that many of the things I'm saying are not mutually exclusive to each other. These atheists will say that our core moral values are innate, and this does all the heavy lifting. They argue that for the vast majority of us, our morals don't come from a holy book or a moral philosophy textbook. We simply listen to our moral intuitions. We have moral intuitions that were ingrained in us by natural selection, out of necessity, and as a social species, we were selected for pro-social and cooperative inclinations because those traits are adaptive, meaning they aid in the survival of our genes. As Christopher Hitchens was fond of pointing out, our morality is primarily innate.
On my mother's side, some of my ancestry is Jewish. Am I expected to believe that my mother's ancestors got all the way to Mount Sinai, quite a trek, under the impression until they got there that rape, murder, perjury, and theft were okay, only to be told when they got to the foot of Mount Sinai, bad news, none of these things is kosher after all. They're all forbidden. No, I don't think so. I think we can actually have a better explanation in every sense. That no one would have been able to get as far as Mount Sinai or in any other mountain in any other direction unless they had known that human solidarity demands that we look upon each other as brothers and sisters and that we forbid activities such as murder, rape, perjury, and theft, that this is innate in us.
And besides, since when does having objective morality prevent you from committing genocide or defending it? Ask Christian apologists about the Old Testament massacres and watch them effortlessly switch from claiming that atheism leads to genocide to defending genocide in the Bible. Apparently, claiming to have objective morality doesn't make one impervious to enormous moral errors. If you find yourself engaging in genocide apologetics, you've lost the high ground, and you may want to re-examine your moral beliefs to figure out how you got here. Also, the Christian version of objective morality is riddled with its own problems, such as Euthyphro's dilemma and the problem of holiness, the latter of which was discussed in episode 6. Some still assert that atheists who are not moral realists can't say that something like genocide is objectively wrong, and apparently, if you can't say that it's objectively wrong, like 2 and 2 equaling 5, then you have no grounds to criticize it harshly at all. Christian apologists on the extreme end of the spectrum will say something like this.
Because if there's no God, if there's no standard beyond humanity, then this is just your opinion against Hitler's opinion.
Even if that were true, it wouldn't be an argument. You would just be appealing to undesirable consequences. It's amazing how often I find myself saying that, arguing with Christian apologists. However, to go on a small tangent, many of these apologists seem to think that they're standing on some different plane than atheists merely by asserting that their morality is objective. They've done no work in justifying this, they just say it's objective because God said so. How do they even know what God wants? Because of the Bible, I suppose, in addition to their strong inner conviction. Why should I listen to what God thinks about morality in the first place? Because God said that I should. And because he's really, really strong. I don't think this counts as a good argument. They seem to think they have justified objective morality by merely claiming that God agrees with them. Well, I can play that game too. I know that rule utilitarianism is objectively morally correct because the monkey god Hanuman says so. How do I know Hanuman says that? Well, because of this vague and self-contradictory book I have, in addition to the warm glow of my subjective certainty. Why should you care what Hanuman has to say about morality anyway? Well, because he's God. Hello? Anyone who doesn't agree with me, or sorry, doesn't agree with Hanuman, is a moral relativist. Now imagine that none of the followers of Hanuman agreed on basic moral issues and still claimed it was objective. This is the status of Christian objective morality.
Theory, the only difference between you and me is that I take responsibility for my moral decisions, and you justify your moral decisions by finding a passage in the Bible that matches your moral decisions and saying, aha, it's objective morality.
You can support this show on a per-episode basis at patreon.com/counter, where you can earn early access to every episode in addition to many other benefits. If you don't have the money to support on Patreon, but you still want to be held responsible for Nazi eugenics, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you can. Feel free to reach out with questions, comments, or topic suggestions using the contact info you can find in the show notes. If you think I've made an error or excluded an important argument for or against what was discussed in this episode, you can message me using the contact info in the show notes, or voice your opinion publicly on our social media. Our theme music was written and performed by the band Wailers. The song is called Magic Tricks and was used with permission. Thank you for joining me today. I've been Everson Green, and I'll see you next time we meet to counter apologetics.